Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, Mike Bonifer from Big Story tells a remarkable story about how Mike Tyson helped birth his son. No kidding.
I'm running around telling people, my wife's outside having a baby, and they go, we'll get her inside and we can take care of it. It's Mike Tyson. And so now Tyson is engaged in, you're having a baby, let me rub your stomach for good luck. And he rubbed her stomach, and he goes, oh, yeah, I can feel him kicking. He's a fighter. He's going to be a fighter.
Today on the show, Mike Bonifer from Big Story talks about how Mike Tyson helped birth his son. Stay close.
Hi, it's Mike Bonifer, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Longtime fan of the show or a new listener, and I gotta tell you, if you're a new listener, man, you got a lot of catching up to do, because this is my 556th episode, I believe.
Yay.
Anyway, you guys, welcome to Storyworthy. I'm so glad you're here. Now, I hope you heard the story last week with comedian Fielding Edlow, and Fielding talked about, okay, first of all, Fielding Edlow is one of the funniest comedians. Like, she's like very, I don't know, she's probably been doing it for 15 years, but it's just very, very funny. She's very hip. It's very, like, current.
It's a cool name.
She does have a cool name.
She sounds like she's catching laughs out there.
Yeah, she does have a cool name.
I'm Fielding Edlow today.
Yeah. What position are you playing?
Yeah, Fielding Edlow.
So anyway, Fielding, she talks about this elementary school drama, okay? That's the name of the show, Elementary School Drama. And I thought, because I don't want to know people's story before they come.
Right.
So I didn't know what her story was about, but I heard elementary school drama. So I'm thinking it'd be like something light.
Yes.
Like something about, you know, maybe children.
Erasers, chalk.
Yeah, like a bad grade or something. But actually the story was about she and her husband getting accused of child abuse.
No.
And like the Department of Children's Services coming in and police and all because of a misconstrued situation. Oh. Yeah, just total drama. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, really good. So you guys go back and listen to Fielding. It's not a funny story, but it's a good story, man.
I'm always amazed by how much stuff I did growing up at school at recess that would be arrestable consequences today.
I'm telling you.
We played with pocket knives. We played with knives at recess. Everybody had a knife and we threw them.
Yeah, the people carried pocket knives and we would set off firecrackers just all the time. Smoke bombs, M80s. I mean, we just always had
stink bombs, different kinds of bombs.
And then we also had a smoking area in high school.
High school. Wow.
In high school, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade, there was a smoking area where you could go out and smoke at lunch if you had a note from your parent.
Remember when people could smoke in class in college? That was in college, I think. And people would just light up.
I think so, yeah. And, you know, I was a flight attendant. And when I was a flight attendant, 1989, 1990, 1991, you could smoke.
Smoking sections. Yeah, getting sentenced to a smoking section was a fate worse than hell.
Well, and the thing is, it would be like, ladies and gentlemen, we're now passing through 10,000 feet.
Light them up.
If you're sitting in rows 1 through 4 or 18 through 22, feel free to smoke. And if you're in rows 5 through 17, you're screwed.
Hey, join the jamboree.
There's nothing you could do. Yeah, it was just
inhale,
so
people.
Ridiculous, especially on smaller planes like a DC-9 where there's only two rows in first class, right? Because there's only 8 first class seats,
right.
Or maybe, you know.
Right.
And the first row is
light them up.
And the second row is non-smoking. Then you go through the curtain and they can start smoking again.
They should have dropped gas masks for everyone.
So crazy. Anyway, you guys, stick with me right now because I am here with master storyteller Mike Bonifer. And you've been on the show before, Mike.
Yes, I have.
And you had a very highly rated episode, I may say.
Thank you for that. I guess that's why I'm back.
And it was about Bill Murray, right?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was Finding Bill Murray, which it did super well.
Good. And well, now, Bill Murray does well.
And now today you bring forth a topic, Mike Tyson helped my son get born. And I got to tell you, if one more person comes in here with a story about how Mike Tyson almost had their son born.
He just went around birthing people.
This topic is really unusual. Mike Tyson helped my son get born, but I'm assuming, I know you, I'm sure you know Mike Tyson.
I do not know Mike Tyson. Only met Mike Tyson once.
Okay.
And it was on the day he helped my son get born.
Oh my gosh. I cannot wait. I don't know much about Mike Tyson. I remember, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, when his name was really hot. And he bit that guy's ear off.
Evander
right?
Holyfield.
Yeah, and so there was that whole thing.
But before that, he was king of the world in terms of boxing, in terms of fighting. There was no mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
Mike Tyson was as big as it got. When he would show up at a Lakers game, half the people in the crowd would be standing and gawking because there was Tyson.
And he was married to Robin Givens, right? And she's a beautiful girl.
Yes.
They had children together?
I do not know.
I don't know if they did or not, but I remember then, did he hit her or something?
That may play into my story.
Ay, ay, ay. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing this, but I did want to actually throw a few things by you. Right now, you don't even know this, Mike Bonifer, but I am wearing my very favorite bra.
Beautiful.
Thank you. It is a Third Love bra. Have you ever heard of these bras?
I have not.
You have girlfriends. You've had wives.
Girlfriends, wives. Oh, you name it.
There's girls coming in and out of the Mike Bonifer world.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, anyway,
Let's stop it now.
Every woman loves Third Love, and there is good reason. First of all, they give you the perfect fit. They have over 70 sizes of bras.
There are 70 sizes of bras?
There's over 70 sizes.
Wow.
Yeah. Because the thing is, every woman is different, and not everybody just fits into like a 34B or a 36C or something so common. So Third Love does this really neat thing where they help you identify your breast size and shape, and they find the styles that fit your body perfectly. And here's the thing, you get 100% fit guarantee. Every customer has 60 days to wear the bra, wash it, put it to the test, and if you don't love it, you can return it, and Third Love will wash it, and they'll donate it to a woman in need. Two more things I love about it, if I may, Mike Bonifer.
Please do.
There's no tags.
Oh, that's good, because those tags are irritant, right?
They are, and they imprint the information right on the strap of the bra, which makes sense. They're incredibly soft, and they're smooth, and they're breathable, and they have gold hardware. I could show you.
So gold hardware?
Yeah, don't you love that?
Whoa.
I love that. And check it out, you guys.
Gold hardware, you guys.
Third Love knows that there's a perfect bra for everybody, so right now they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. So go over to thirdlove.com/story now, and you'll find your perfect fit bra. Again, that's thirdlove.com/story and find a perfect bra. Plus, you'll get 15% off your very first purchase. Again, it's thirdlove.com/story for 15% off today. Listen, I am excited to hear your story about Mike Tyson helping your son get born. By the way, does your son know this story?
Yes. Oh, yes, he does.
And you have two children?
Yes, I do. Adam and Alex. Alex is in the Sunday company at the Groundlings.
Oh, wow.
So you
that's
and I
a
have
deal.
Improv background, and this is way on up there in
is
the
it
improv
Alex
world.
Bonifer?
Alex Bonifer in
him.
The Sunday company at the Groundlings
Sweet.
On Melrose in Hollywood.
That's really a good
deal. And my son Adam works at CBS in post production.
Nice.
And produces on air promos. And,
I tell you, you know, my daughter, she's only 12, but she's got her own YouTube channel. And
Bama,
she's,
right?
Yeah, and she's really into editing, and it's just so cool the choices I think our kids have. I mean, everybody does everywhere, but now, or especially being in Hollywood and seeing your parents in the industry or whatever, I feel like, you know, she's much further along than some of her other school friends.
They've apprenticed in the storytelling trade, our children.
Yeah.
And it's gratifying to see that they pick up the trade. The same way it would be, I mean, I grew up on a farm, and people generationally farm the land. And for us, we have intellectual property. And so we're seeing our children farm the same intellectual property that we grew up with and built.
It makes me so proud of her.
Yes, that's great.
I don't, you know, I've given her some tips in GarageBand, but I haven't really ever sat with her and worked through any of the software, and she's got like iMovie like the back of her hand, and she's doing GarageBand, and she's like, you know.
I have a friend in Mississippi whose daughter is 12 years old, and she last year collaborated with five other young people.
Yeah.
I think they were all young women her age around the world on a novel. And they all assigned themselves roles, and one was the story creator, and one was the writer, and one was the editor.
Was it a series of books? Like, so
no, it was
characters?
A novel. It was a novel, and they collaborated on it and built it together. And this is second nature.
I want to be within a group with with five 11-year-olds.
That would be astonishing. It would be a great output, I'm sure.
Hey,
you would learn something.
Let me talk to you about one more sponsor that I have that I'm really thrilled about, and that is Robinhood. Are you familiar with Robinhood?
Yes, I am.
It is an investing app, as you know, that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. Now, while other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits. Plus, there's no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. A lot of people think that you have to have like a certain drop of money, you know, like 10 grand or 5 grand or something to start investing, but you don't. You don't need that much money. Robinhood has a simple, intuitive design, and it makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. You can view easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so that you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood, right now, you guys, is giving my listeners at Storyworthy a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint, no kidding, to help you build your portfolio. So sign up at storyworthy.robinhood.com. Again, it's storyworthy.robinhood.com. One more time, it's storyworthy.robinhood.com, and you are going to thank me because...
You're not going to give it to the Sheriff of Nottingham or Prince John. You're going to keep it for yourself and give it to the people.
There you go. That's what I'm a giver. And yeah. Everybody knows that.
Sherwood Forest is open to everyone.
Storyworthy.robinhood.com. It really is a fun app. I'm like waiting in line at the post office, you know, for my postal needs. And I'm investing
with
my phone.
You're doing your investing.
You know. All right, listen, you guys. Before we get to Mike's story, I did want to remind you to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy. I keep it very simple. At Storyworthy. You know what
that's
I mean?
That's good.
You don't have to think about it. You just know that that's what it is. At Storyworthy. And also, you guys, I would be remiss not to mention my other podcast, Screwed Up Stories. Mm. Head over to screwedupstories.com, you guys, and check out me and Rachel O'Brien and our Screwed Up Stories. It's been all women. We have 25 shows out now. And it's going really well. It's over with Westwood One Podcast. Yeah, we record in Culver City.
May I recommend, is it all women? Do you typically do that?
We've had one man so far, and we have one more man on tomorrow. But generally, it's all women. Why? And you guys, also check out my game show, Story Smash. I'm telling you, it's been going so well.
It's hilarious.
It's every single month at the Hollywood Improv, and you can find more information at storysmashshow.com. All right, you guys, he's here right now, Mike Bonifer. He is the founder and president of his own company called Big Story, and you conduct workshops in agile storytelling. Which, what does that mean? Agile storytelling.
Collaborative. And we use game structures as the basis of the collaboration.
Okay. And you do this for organizations all around the world. Now, you're also the co-founder of 21 Day Story, which is like a cloud technology platform for solving problems in 21 days through, again, collaborative storytelling. And that's a whole other thing you're doing. So you're very busy.
Well, that's the big one. 21 Day Story, which is 21daystory.com.
Okay, good.
Is my big bet on the future.
Okay.
So what it does, it lets people access, if a group of any size can access a story prompt a day. Each prompt takes between 60 and 90 seconds.
Right.
And it moves a story along that's co-created by that group.
Right.
The resolution of the story is the solving of a problem, a business or community problem. So let's say it's the Obama Foundation getting approval from the south side of Chicago to build the Obama Presidential Center in the space where they want to build it. They need community buy-in. They need a collaboration. They need a solution that is a win-win scenario for both the south side of Chicago and the Obama Foundation. So we're in the midst of discussing with them how to use a 21-day story. Crisis management, launching a campaign.
So it's 21 days
that you spend with these people. It's 21 days, 21 consecutive days, either weekdays or consecutive days. They get a story prompt. We don't spend it with them, which is what makes it very economical. They get a prompt on their phone or email.
I see.
And their input to that prompt determines the future direction of the story.
Wow.
And the group collaboratively solves the problem or meets the challenge.
Yeah.
So one company we're talking to, or we're working with now actually, has a 60th anniversary this year. It's their 60th anniversary of being in business. And they were having a real difficult time deciding, because there's a lot of ideas about what to do for your 60th anniversary. And so by using a 21-day story, in 21 days, they're able to get input from all the stakeholders, everybody's whose opinion matters.
Smart, man.
And then at the end of the 21 days, on day 22, they have defined what their 60th anniversary celebration looks like. Events through the year, budgets, schedules, who needs to be involved. It is the what we call the roadmap for that particular project for the year.
That's very smart.
Thank you.
That's really interesting. You guys can find Mike also over on Twitter at Big Story Biz. Do you spend any time over there on Twitter?
I'm mostly on at Bonifer, B-O-N-I-F-E-R. I spend time on Twitter. I get a lot of my news links. And
do we follow each other?
Comment.
I don't know if I follow
we do.
You there,
we do. I follow you. Okay. Oh, my God. You don't follow me?
I'll make sure I do.
Please.
All right,
reach
you guys,
out.
Whoever you are, put your hands together for Mike Bonifer. Yay.
Well, normally I withhold the name of the key participant in the story until a reveal in the story, but people already know. So this is a story about how Mike Tyson, then the heavyweight champion of the world, helped my son Alex get born. August 6th, 1988, my wife goes into labor. We're living in Glendale. We're delivering the baby at Cedars-Sinai Hospital all the way the hell across town at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And this is the dream scenario for somebody that wants a cop to stop them for running a stoplight and goes, what are you doing? Well, my wife's having a baby. Well, let me give you a police escort. None of that happened. I was running red lights. I was driving on curbs. I was driving. It's a little bothersome. I think even as it was happening, I was wondering about the state of street policing in the city of Los Angeles, because nobody was stopping me from doing any of this stuff. It merited a live police chase. I got nothing. And so we get to Cedars-Sinai. The entire way, my wife is going, I'm having the baby. I'm having the baby. She's doubled over in the front seat of the car. I'm having the baby. I'm going to have it in the car. The contractions were coming every few minutes, it seemed like. And I am driving like a maniac. And we get to Cedars-Sinai on one of the busiest afternoons probably that hospital has ever seen. We pull up to the emergency entrance, which, per our instructions from the OB department, and I run inside to get help, and I notice on the periphery of my vision that there were older dudes in black suits, white shirts, and black ties, two of them standing by each of the two entrances. So four old, crusty-looking, mobster-looking dudes dressed like the Blues Brothers standing by these entrances. But it's just on my periphery, and I run inside, and there are 200 people inside that emergency room lobby trying to get attention, and I cannot get any attention. I'm running around telling people my wife's outside having a baby, and they go, we'll get her inside and we can take care of it. Very cold, very clinical, as it tends to be at Cedars-Sinai until the crunch comes down and you need to, you know, really get serious, and then they're fantastic. But I'm frantic now, so I go outside and I'm thinking, I got to get her inside. So she's doubled over in the front seat having these contractions, and I'm telling her, I got to carry you, like you're going to have to walk. And a guy comes out, some stranger pushing a wheelchair, and he stops it like 5 feet from the car and just stands there. And I go, hey, buddy, what are you doing? Like, don't just stand there. Help my wife get in the car. I thought he was working. He goes, man, don't yell at me. I don't work here. I just heard you needed help, and I saw an empty wheelchair, and I brought it out for you. So I'm all apologetic, and I'm going, oh, I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean to. I'm on edge. You know, we're having a baby. So the two of us helped her into the wheelchair, and I'm wheeling her inside, and she's still having the baby. We get inside. I still cannot get any attention for her, even though she's in the middle of this emergency room lobby, doubled over, having contractions. I'm running around looking for help, but everybody's looking for help. So I went from one side of the emergency room lobby to the other, trying to find somebody to help. And when I get to the other side from where my wife was, in the wheelchair, the doors open and the four crusty old mobster looking dudes walk in like a little entourage. And in the middle of them is a black man in a powder blue sweatsuit with the thickest neck I've ever seen on a human being. They were walking away from me, but I knew who it was. It was Mike Tyson. And I go, that's why they were waiting. And I just instinctively go, hey, Mike. And he turns around, he sees he doesn't know me, he just keeps walking without missing a stride. But then I say the thing that stops him in his tracks. I go, my wife is having a baby, come wish her good luck. And he stops, and the entourage, the four dudes stop around him, and he goes, is she here? And I go, yeah, she's right over here, come on. He goes, okay. And he walks over. My wife has her back to this whole scene. She doesn't see it coming. And in perpetual testimony to the narcotic power of celebrity, he comes around in front of her. She's doubled over in pain and contractions. He goes, "Hey, how you doing?" And she looks up and she sees Mike Tyson 2 feet away from her. And she goes, "Oh, hey, hi, how are you?" Completely forgetting why she's there and what's going on with her body. It's Mike Tyson. And so now Tyson is engaged you're having a baby. Let me rub your stomach for good luck. And he rubbed her stomach and he goes, "Oh yeah, I can feel him kicking. He's a fighter. He's going to be a fighter." And by now, within 20 seconds, we have six orderlies fighting for the honor of wheeling my wife upstairs to the delivery room. And so Tyson is like, "Well, good luck. And he takes off. And now we get upstairs, and at 8 p.m., weighing 8 pounds, 8 ounces, on 8/6/88, my son, Alex Bonifer, was born. Now, there's a postscript to this, which is that there are two postscripts, actually. There's a postscript and there's a postscript that have happened since this event in the course of Alex's life. The first is that he's heard this story his whole life.
Right.
He's heard how Mike Tyson helped him get born, how he's a fighter. "Oh, he's a fighter. I can feel him punching." And his given name is John Alexander Bonifer. So I used to say, your initials are JAB. You know why? That's because Tyson, the champ, helped you get born. That's why we chose that name. It's JAB. And then the other variation is, we almost named you Mike Tyson Bonifer in honor of that. And he knows it's BS and he knows I'm spinning yarns, but at the same time, the fable has taken on a life.
Definitely.
So flash forward to the Evander Holyfield fight where Tyson bit off Evander Holyfield's ear. Alex is 10 years old. So it must be 98 at that point. And there, I'm with a group of people. I'm not particularly interested in the fight game, but a group of people had bought the pay-per-view. And a friend had invited a group of people over to watch the pay-per-view. So we had food and people were carrying on and there was an undercard and it was there. And everybody in the room, when Tyson bit Holyfield's ear off and then Holyfield was declared the champion, all these people were jumping up and cheering for what was the underdog, really. And they were so excited. And I turned around. Everybody's standing. It was such a thing. And I turned around and Alex was sitting on the couch. He was crying. He had been carrying this heroic flame for Mike Tyson for all 10 of his years. He had heard that.
Sure.
And so that was the first thing I remember. And the second thing was only last year, Mike Tyson did an AMA on Reddit. And we had always talked about, I wonder if Mike Tyson remembers that day like we remember that day. And I went back and forth, and I there's no way to know unless you ask. And I go, "Oh, here's our chance. Alex, why don't you ask?"
Wow.
And so there were, of course, tens of thousands of questions, but Mike Tyson picked Alex's question to answer. Because Alex said, "Do you remember the day you helped me get born?" And he said, "I'm sorry, pal, I don't."
Wow.
And so that kind of, but a lot of people responded to hearing the story on Reddit. So people were like, "Wow, that's amazing. Did it actually happen?" And it was a good reflection, especially since my son is in the a profession acting that can generate fame. It's a good lesson about fame, is that people that are in the eye like that, especially somebody that's on top of the world as the heavyweight champion of the world like Mike Tyson, they have what we would consider peak experiences every single day. Unless somebody walks through the door leading a Bengal tiger dressed in gold lame and, holding sparklers in each hand, it just will not stick out. And it's just one more day in the life of a day of a person for whom every day has crazy shit like this going on. People running up to him in hospital emergency room lobbies and every single day this goes on.
But I wonder what he was there in the hospital for. He should have remembered that.
Well, this is another reason he doesn't remember it, Christine. I believe he was there to visit Robin Givens, who he had put in the hospital.
Oh.
Allegedly, because he had hit her.
Wow.
And I believe you put that in a category where I just, you know, I'm not going to remember that day. I'm going to put that out of my memory. So I believe that was the case. And so it wouldn't do the Tyson brand much good. And here I am surfacing it, but surfacing it as like we are all a mix of possibilities.
I can't believe he was touching her stomach though. Like really feeling her stomach, you said.
Yes.
Did he have big hands?
Yes.
How tall is Mike Tyson?
Not that tall. Yeah. 5'11", 5'10", maybe.
Yeah.
He wasn't tall, but he was thick. You know, shoulders thick, neck thick.
So he was visiting...
I believe he was there to see Robin Gibbons. Because that was happening right around that same time.
Especially because he's in that track suit, so he's not like a patient or anything.
Right.
I mean, I guess he could have had an appointment.
No, no, no. He was there. I'm pretty sure he was there to visit her. It was pretty well publicized.
My daughter was also born at Cedars, and I know that emergency room.
Oh.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's scary, though. That was... Wait, that was her second child or her first?
Oh, second.
Second child.
Yes,
yeah, because the
yes.
first child, no way was that child born that fast, right?
Oh, no, no. The Alex was born that evening. So it was later. It was like 3 hours later, I think
I
he was
see,
born.
But
3 hours
still,
after
that's
we got
still
into the
quite
No,
a
first
short
one
time.
Was like 24 hours.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
Around the clock. It was all the things, the walking and the, you know.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then, yeah, as you have more children, like I'm the sixth child, and my mom said, you know.
You just dropped out like a loaf of bread off
gross.
A shelf.
Kind of gross, yeah. Like in the hallway of the hospital. Like they weren't even in a room yet.
You remember the scene from Monty Python's Life of Brian?
Yeah, tell me which one.
Every little sperm is sacred,
yeah,
and
sure,
it's the Irish washerwoman who's just dropping babies out
while she's
washing dishes.
I got to watch that again.
There's babies in all the cupboards. Super and it's
funny.
Just the Irish can't stop.
That's super funny.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a great story. Yeah, that's funny, and it's true. Also, I mean, you don't see a celebrity every day, but if you are a celebrity, you know that your world is just so different. But not all the time. I mean, because people are not always working.
Well, there's different kinds of fame.
Yeah.
And I've been in the fame business beginning. I started as a publicist. So, you know, way back in the beginning of my career in the entertainment business, my job was taking famous people around to be famous, to be on TV, to get interviewed by the media. And I saw early on that when it comes to a film, let's say, there's situational fame. And then there's just blanket fame where, you know, if you're Jeff Bridges, you can hardly go anywhere without being recognized
yeah,
and without people spotting and whispering and talking
and so
about you.
They don't go places. They don't go to the grocery
exactly.
store.
Exactly. So you have to order a life. You have to construct your life so that you can have some privacy. And it's a giant pain in the ass. You know, it is a full-time occupation for somebody like that or a full-time consideration to go, where can I go where I'm not going to be
Angelina
gawked at.
Angelina Jolie lives down the street from me and she, I never see her anywhere. In town.
Right.
I never see her. And I'm like,
right.
I know she has kids, so I know they must go out.
Right.
But you never see her.
It's a whole thing.
That'd be hard. That'd be miserable.
Well, I watched, I had an office above a restaurant where the Tom Cruise movie, not The Color of Money, the one where he's an agent, a sports agent.
Yeah.
What's that called?
Something Maguire,
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
They were shooting Jerry Maguire, and Tom Cruise pulled up. So the town car limo carrying Tom Cruise pulled up, and behind the limo was a motorhome, and pulled up parked right below my office. I had it on the second floor, and I'm watching this, and I'm watching what goes on in terms of the detail, the security detail for Tom Cruise to get out of the limo and get his baby handed to him out of the motorhome. It involves security people and walkie-talkies, and the eagle has landed, the crow is leaving the nest. We're bringing baby chickadee down the down the tree, and it was a whole. There must have been 12 moves to have Tom Cruise get out of the car, approach the motorhome, have the motorhome open, have the nanny hand him his baby so that he could then walk onto the set with his baby. And you think, if everything were that complicated, what is the point? What is
you're just talking about the baby in the film.
No, I'm talking about the baby. No, this is real life. This is his own baby.
Then why was he walking then on to where?
He was just getting ready to shoot. They were just driving him up to the place.
But why would he take the baby then if he's on his way to shoot?
He's just walking to the set. He was just arriving at the set that day.
So he was just holding his baby to walk
onto the set to walk around.
Right.
But it took 12 security moves just, and he wasn't even riding in the motorhome with the baby.
Yeah.
So he came in a separate
car.
Well,
he's a tough example because he's pretty weird.
I got more examples. What do you want?
Well, but, I'm just saying Tom Cruise, he's never been known
right.
to be the
well,
most
that's,
stable.
Right. Well, you manufacture your fame. I mean, there's other, you know, Bill Murray told me that fame is the booby prize.
Interesting.
And I go, what do you mean? And he goes, well, fame is like this. Fame is like being in heavy traffic in Manhattan, and three cars up in front of you, there's a red convertible with a blonde woman behind the wheel. And you risk life and limb to pull up alongside this woman to make eye contact, make a connection, say hi. And you nearly kill yourself, but finally you get alongside, you pull up, and you find out that she's got terrible acne and she only speaks Flemish. That's fame. And so, you know, it's something to be treated warily, I guess. I know, you know, Bill's brother Joel told me they have a strategy for going out with Bill in Manhattan so that Bill won't be recognized, so that they can actually walk. And it involves hats and having somebody in front and behind and knowing the angles so that you don't cause traffic accidents
so
and
hard.
Everybody doesn't yell at you.
That would be a really weird way to live.
I was staying in the Paris Hilton, where the tennis players play during the French Open.
Yeah.
And it was during the Jimmy Connors, Bjorn Borg, John McEnroe era. And Bjorn Borg was staying in my hotel.
Yeah.
And he was so shy. You could see the different players handle fame different ways. Like Vitas Gerulaitis, he wanted the fame. He wanted the attention everywhere. There was a bunch of people
Bjorn
around
had
him.
He had a girlfriend too, though.
He was married. He was married to Mariana then,
right.
I think. So she would like go and do a little shopping in the drugstore. He would stay in the elevator and wait, and he would look like a cornered animal. He was so shy. He was palpably shy.
That's something.
He did not want to be recognized. And when he and I met eyes at one point, he just looked away.
Did you ever see that special on him on HBO? It's a sports documentary about him. That's a great.
Yes, it really is.
It's the McEnroe Bjorg match.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, that's a great
That really is.
Love that.
That was legend.
That's the other thing you and I have in common is our love of tennis.
Yes.
Yeah, we haven't played each other, Mike.
I would lose, but let's play.
How could you lose? You're so tall. You must kill.
I know.
You know,
that's the thing, is that the things I should kill at, serve and net, I'm not really that good at. I'm a very casual tennis player. I'm a low B at best.
Really?
You know? Yeah. I mean,
so
I get on
baseline shots. You just like.
Well,
them.
I'll come to the net. I'll play at the net. And I learn more all the time. As you know, I play at Ladera Park down in Inglewood. And it's a doubles game that's been going on for, I think it's something like 27
Amazing.
Years right
I
now.
Think that's stunning.
And
I love that.
It's people of all ages. There's no winners. You rotate everyone in.
Yeah.
And they kind of pair people up, and it's men and women, and it's, I would say, people from age 30 to age 80.
It's a community, yeah.
It's a real community. And
that's the beauty of tennis. You can be any age.
Right.
I love that.
Right, right.
Hey, listen, thank you so much for your story.
Oh,
I can't believe it, because I kept saying to you, like, you know, come on, Mike. Mike Tyson helped my son get born. Like, I didn't understand
what
you were saying.
Does it make sense now, Christine?
It does.
Okay, good.
What happened was Mike Tyson helped get your son born.
That's what it was. Isn't that what I told you? And then you just couldn't get your head around. And no, it's hard to get around. You know, you go, well, okay, on what, in what way? In what way?
Listen, you guys, I want to thank you again so much for listening today. And a big shout out to all the sponsors on the show today. Really, you guys, when you support my sponsors, then you're supporting me and my child. Hooray!
Yes.
Tweet Mike over there on Twitter at Bonifer, right?
At Bonifer, B-O-N-I-F-E-R. And check out 21 Day Story at 21daystory.com.
21daystory.com. I'm excited about that.
Thank you. So are we.
It's excellent. All right, you guys. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story worthy week.
Thank you, Christine.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.